Again, in Matthew 11 and verse 29, Jesus says, "Take my yoke upon you and learn of me, for I am meek and lowly in heart, and you'll find rest unto your souls." We're going to talk again about more qualities of the Christian life and building a successful life. The first Sunday night, we talked about lowliness, and the term also humility goes with that. In the Sermon on the Mount, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, theirs is the kingdom of heaven." Jesus didn't preach that to people before he didn't first practice it. "For I am meek and lowly in heart." Same concept. Of course, "Blessed are the meek, they shall inherit the earth." Sermon on the Mount, Jesus himself was that quality. Tonight we're going to look at two particular qualities. They are somewhat synonyms one to the other, but there's a little bit of difference when they're found in a passage that goes together, like long-suffering and patient. You've heard the old expression about the man who stood up one day to pray, "Lord, give us patience and give it to us right now." Well, James 1 says, "Count it all joy when you fall into divers temptations, knowing this, that the trying of your faith works patience." Well, it said, well, we didn't ask for what tries your faith, we just ask for the patience. Well, it sort of goes hand in hand, and again, long-suffering. How do you develop long-suffering without suffering, and suffering a long time? It doesn't work that way. How do you develop patience without the trying times of life? Well, it doesn't come. Neither one of these qualities come the either easy way, but they are successes to building a successful life. They're qualities to building a successful life. So the concept, if you take the word, take a concordance, look up the word long-suffering, and take a concordance and look up the word patience, and you read every verse, both Old and New Testament, by the way. There's not that many of them that actually have just the word long-suffering and the word patience. There's all kind of other words that are translated these qualities, like endure. Endure is along the word for patience as well. Slow to anger is a phrase that also meant long-suffering. A person who controlled their anger. That doesn't mean that they didn't ever get angry. It means that they didn't boil over and therefore turn into wrath or fury. But long-suffering was a term that pretty much dealt with how you deal with people. It doesn't mean that it didn't have anything to do with like circumstances or conditions that didn't involve people, but pretty much, more times than not, long-suffering meant what you do with people, either your family members or your friends. By the way, that's pretty easy sometimes in dealing with long-suffering. And then you get outside your family member and your friends, that inner circle, and then you're dealing with just, you know, acquaintances that you meet that you're not necessarily close friends with. And then you ultimately go all the way out to your enemies. Your enemies. So how do you deal with your enemies? Well, long-suffering was a part of that as well. Now, the word patient or patience is a concept that sometimes it had to do with people, but more times than not, it had to do with situations you run into. And we'll talk about some practical applications of that. And oftentimes it was under the term of endurance. In other words, something you have to put up with just because we're in this world and we're having to deal with what we deal with in this life. And it doesn't necessarily have anything to do with people. It's just, this is the way life is. Endure. Be patient. Okay? So let's start with passages on long-suffering. Matter of fact, there's a lot of them, and I put three here to sort of help us to understand. Number one, God himself is long-suffering. So what we're talking about building a successful life for you and me, God is telling us not to do something that he himself has not already, you know, he has this quality. "The Lord is not slack concerning his promise, as some men count slackness, but is long-suffering to whom? To usward." See, long-suffering is toward people. Okay? "Not willing that any should perish, but that all should come to repentance." So I ask you the question tonight, as we're just studying this. Is God's long-suffering in existence right now? Was God's long-suffering in existence last time we met? Was God's long-suffering yesterday? If there's a tomorrow, will God be long-suffering tomorrow? In Psalm 7:11, you know, the reason I remember this is because of the 7-Eleven store that's out here. I don't know if it's still out here or not. where he talks about God will judge his people. He is angry with the wicked every day. God is angry with the wicked every day. He was angry with the wicked yesterday. He was angry today. If there's a tomorrow, he'll be angry with the wicked tomorrow. Okay? Now, does that mean God just wipes them off the face of the earth? No. He is still long-suffering. Ephesians chapter 4, verses 1 and 2, where Paul talks about you walk worthy of the vocation wherewith you're called, with all lowliness and meekness, with long-suffering, forbearing one another with love. Now look at that word forbearing. Okay? Forbearing and long-suffering are connected to lowliness and meekness. As a matter of fact, the reason I went to this lesson of long-suffering and patience is because you go with lowliness and then meekness and then long-suffering, which is Sunday night, first Sunday in January, last Sunday, this Sunday. Lowliness, meekness, long-suffering. Okay? Now, you can't have long-suffering without starting at the first quality. Lowliness, meekness, which is the second quality. Now long-suffering. For example, if I have the wrong attitude about myself and the wrong attitude towards strength under stressful situations, what am I going to do with long-suffering? You ever know of anybody to sort of get the big head? And because of that, they don't have much long-suffering with the people they're having to work with, because why can't you figure this out? Okay? Forbearing one another. What does the word forbearing mean? Okay? In the South, here's how we put it. Putting up with. Just putting up with. Okay? It's not going away. They're not going away. So what do I got to do with that? Put up with. Okay? And again, we're going to get to the practical side of this in just a minute. But look at 1 Timothy chapter 1, verses 15 and 16. Paul says, the faithful saying, worthy of all acceptation, that Christ Jesus came into the world to save sinners, of whom I am chief. Howbeit, for this cause I obtained mercy, that in me first Jesus Christ might show forth all longsuffering for a pattern to them which should hereafter believe in him to life everlasting. Paul says, I am God's example of longsuffering to everybody else who will ever be saved. Christ Jesus came to the world to save sinners. Well, who are you talking about? I'm at the top of that list. And because I'm at the top of that list, I become an example to everybody else how long-suffering God is. Okay? Now, do you think Paul understood the concept of long-suffering? First of all, he didn't view it from what I got to put up with you folks. He said, this is what God put up with me. This is how God dealt with me. Long time ago, I should have been dead. Long time ago, he should have killed me, by the way, like Nadab and Abihu, like Ananias and Sapphira, like Uzzah. I should have been, soon as I started down the road I was, to do everything contrary to the name of Jesus of Nazareth, he should have killed me right then. But he didn't. He didn't. Why didn't he do that? Because he's long suffering. And because of God's long suffering, Paul knew. Now I am to manifest that. I'm to manifest that toward other people. I became an example of the pattern of how God works with humanity. Okay, now that's just three of many, many passages you'll find in the New Testament on this one quality, to suffer long. Okay, now let's move over to the idea of patience. Passages on patient or being patient or enduring. Okay? Now, these passages don't necessarily involve people. It involves situations or circumstances. For example, in Luke 8, verse 15, it says, the good ground receives the word, keeps it, and brings forth fruit with patience. And see, that doesn't have anything to do with people there, though it can involve people if you take a big picture. It basically has to do with a gardening term. You put the seed in the ground, it's good ground. Obviously, it's not going to produce a corn plant or a tomato plant or you know, whatever you're looking for in the fruit. It's going to take some time. So what do you do with this plant while it's in the nurturing stage of the seed process, and then the sprout, and then up to maturity, and then the fruit. What do you got to do? You got to wait. W-A-I-T. You got to wait. I challenge you to take a concordance and look up all the verses in the New Testament and Old on the word wait. Wait on the Lord, the Bible says, and he will renew your strength. Wait, I say, on the Lord. By the way, how many of you like waiting? Waiting. Waiting in the doctor's office. Waiting in line at Disney World. Waiting anywhere. Okay? Does it try your patience, so to speak? Waiting. Okay? You ever been around a person who's very impatient? You know, sometimes to understand a quality, you look at its opposite. Okay? Here is a person, it's like, this should have been done yesterday. Why didn't you do this yesterday? Why am I having to ask you now to do it? And then here's a person over here that says, you told me you'd do it. I believe you. I'll just wait on you to get it done. Someone says, why are you waiting on this person? Why does that even cross your mind? I remember our mother, Phyllis's mother and my mother, when Dad would take us fishing, and Mother loved to fish. You just give her a cane pole, stuck a cricket or a minnow or a worm or whatever on the end of that, and our mother would sit on a bank or at the end of that boat right there from sun up to sundown. Never say a word. And our dad was like, Polly, you caught something yet? Come on. Come on. Mother's like, I'm fishing. Give me time. Okay? If we ain't caught anything in 5 minutes, Dad decided we need to move the boat somewhere. They're not here. Fish aren't here. Mother said, Wimford, I just put the hook in the water. Mother sit there all day long. Not my daddy. If you knew my daddy, you knew what I'm talking about. Okay? And then you grow up in that kind of environment. Here is the Rock of Gibraltar that would sit there and wait on you from the sun up to sundown and beyond that. And here's this one over here. Go on, go on, go on. Come on, let's go. We got to be somewhere. I got to do something. You do too. And I'm like, what? What am I supposed to be doing? I don't know, but you got something to do. Okay? Now you think about those, just the two general concepts there. Okay? Patience. Okay? How about Hebrews 10, verse 36? And then you come to chapter 12, verses 1 and 2. You find that word patience or endurance, both passages. As a matter of fact, Hebrews 10, 36 says, you have need of patience. What was this Hebrews problem? They're quitting. They're quitting. They're giving up. They're going back into Judaism. He says, why are you quitting up? Because it didn't even got real hard yet. Hebrews chapter 12, verse 3 says, you have not yet resisted unto blood. You haven't even come to actual physical combat over your faith yet. You're just dealing with minor issues right now. It's going to get really bad in just a few years. By the way, it did. War of the Jews. And it even trickled over to the stability of the church in Palestine. You have need of patience. What about Hebrews 12, 1 and 2? Wherefore, seeing we have such greater cloud of witnesses, let us run with patience the race that is set before us, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that is set before him endured the cross, despised the shame, sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Run with patience. What does that mean? And I'm not even going to run anywhere. I'm not going to run in my house. I'm not going to run even to the refrigerator in the kitchen. Run, that's a four-letter word. You can spell it with three letters, it's a four-letter word. No. If a person runs in a race, does it demand stamina? Does it demand endurance? Does it demand the mentality? Some may quit, many may quit, I'm not going to quit. That's literally what that concept means. Parents, let me ask you this. Have you ever told your child, now what you start, you are going to finish it? I don't care what it is. Whatever you start, you are going to finish it. By the way, that's the way I was raised. Don't start something and don't finish it. It may not be that big a deal. At least finish the task, whatever it is. By the way, how about your Christian life? What you start, make sure you finish. Though there ain't any more important finish line than the Christian life, right? Running the race, cross that finish line. Jesus already showed you how to do it. He's already crossed his finish line. He's given you the example. Run with endurance and look to his example. Don't look at somebody else that started and quit, got discouraged, whatever happened in their head, they started and they quit. Here's the finish line. Here's the finisher. He completes your faith. He's the beginning. He is the finisher of your faith. He's the way. He's the reason you started the run. And he's the reason you finish the run of the Christian life. James 5:11. You have heard of the patience of Job. By the way, do you have to be long-suffering with anybody? How about his friends? How about his wife? Okay. But the word patient there has to do with the circumstances you find yourself in. I'm pretty sure that day recorded in chapter 1, Job got up that day not realizing, I'm fixing to lose all 10 of my children and all my possessions, and only going to have certain servants left and my wife alive to basically tell me all of this stuff. He didn't wake up that day thinking, I'm the greatest man, wealthiest man in the East, and now I'm probably on the poorest level in the entire East. Don't have a single child left. I'm pretty sure that Job probably the other day, the day following, as you find in chapter 2, did not wake up and think, well, at least nothing happened to me physically. Nothing happened to me personally. It was my family. It was my possessions. And all of a sudden, sore boils from the crown of his head to the bottoms of his feet. You can't sit down. You can't lay down. You can't stand up without being in pain. Day and night. And he starts asking the question, wherefore? Did I die? Not, why was I born? Why did I not die in the womb? Why did I not die as soon as I was born? And yet, you go all the way through the book of Job. Did he die? No. If a man die, will he live again? What's the answer to that question? Yes, because the resurrection of Christ guarantees that. Job never saw Jesus Christ. Job was dead and gone long before Jesus Christ was ever born. Matter of fact, Job was dead and gone before David was even born. So what are you going to do, Job? Your wife says, curse God and die. So what does Job do? You speak like the foolish women speak. Shall we not receive these things from God as well as the good? And therefore Job did not sin with his lips. He didn't blame God, we would say. Doesn't mean that wasn't anything he said that later on he said, once I've spoken, twice I'll speak no further. I lay my hand over my mouth. I repent and abhor myself in dust and ashes. By the way, that's in Job chapter 42 when he's talking to God. God's talking to him. What do you mean? You've heard of the patience of Job, that the Lord is pitiful and of tender mercy. Well, it means here's an example in the Bible of a person that went through a very rough time. And still crossed the finish line. Still crossed the finish line. Don't we admire people who sort of have handicaps? You know, the word handicap is almost used in a non-politically correct way. Admire a person who's got this big hurdle in front of them that most people don't have. And what are they doing? They just keep on keeping on. Keep on keeping on. Well, what is that? What did they learn? What did they learn that everybody needs to learn? They've learned endurance. They've learned, I don't know what tomorrow, I don't know the next day, I don't know next month, next year, next whatever. What I do know is, if there is a tomorrow, I will not quit. If there's a day after that, I will not quit. Why? I was mentioning this morning about Appalachian Trail. I followed a man. By the way, his trail name was Lucky. L-U-C-K-Y, Lucky. Okay, he lives in North Carolina. His name is Pat Stidham. No, S-T-I-T-C-H, however you pronounce that. Okay, he did a lecture in North Carolina when he finished the AT. He was 70 years old when he finished. He is one of 25 people, 70 years and above, to ever finish from start to finish the Appalachian Trail. 25 since the 1920s now, guys. The AT is almost 100 years old. There's only been about 25 people from Springer Mountain all the way to Mount Katahdin to finish from 70 and above. 25. He made mention in his lecture of a lot of young people hike this trail. A lot of young people. He says, I think what happened with me was, you know, I've got a lot of mileage on my body versus they don't. But here's what I learned, and with no real intention of ever quitting until I got through. I've lived a lot of things in my life that I've struggled with, and I've learned how to deal with struggles. Now, these young people, they hadn't lived that long, so they hadn't had the experience of how to deal with problems like I have. The days when it's cold and it's wet and it's rainy and you're hungry and you've got rattlesnakes on these rocks and you've got 3,000 foot climb this day and a 3,000 foot descent to get to where you're going to camp that night. He says, that's bad, that's tough. And by the way, 20 miles every day for 150 days. Why would you put your life through that? It's something I want to do, and I did it. Because people were asking him, how did you survive that? He said, you just put one foot in front of the other one. You just get up not knowing what today was going to bring, and you just said, pack up, start walking, one foot in front of another. Don't do anything foolish to get you hurt, but put one foot in front of that. And that's a Christian life. Just put one day in front of the next one. Be long-suffering with the people around you and endure whatever you have to deal with the situations around you. So let's look at now some of these practical applications. How about your marriage and your home? Question. Love. Is love what makes the world go round? Is love the secret to a marriage? Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church. That's in the Bible, right? Wives, love your own children, love your own husbands. That's in Titus 2. So love's on both sides, folks. Husbands, love your wives. Wives, love your children, love your husbands. Let me tell you what the definition of love is. Love suffers long and is kind. So how do you take love and stick it in a marriage? 1 Corinthians 13 says, verse 4, love suffers long. That's the quality we're talking about tonight, one of them. You come down to verse 8, and here's what it also says about love. Bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things. What else? Endures all things. Guess what endures is? That's patience. Oh, I want that kind of love. Well, guess what? That's hard. You can't take a pill and get that kind of love. It takes work to get this kind of love. Suffers long. Endures all things. You know, we're about to have donuts in just a few minutes. I know just to say that makes you think I would need to quit, right? Steve and Candy are here. And Candy Taylor did something years ago at Old Bethel, the old building down here, for girls' class. And I'll just share it with you. For those of you that have experienced this, you already know what I'm about to say. Candy asked several of us in this congregation if we had a copy of our wedding picture and if we had a copy of our current picture as a couple. She took a bulletin board in the classroom, and for those of us that gave, Pam found a picture of she and I the day we got married, and of course then she had a recent picture of she and I. And what Candy did was she took this bulletin board and she drew a line down the middle of it, and she put then and now. I think she said then and now, okay, or married and current, or whatever the words were. And she put all the wedding photos on one side, and she put all the other current photos on the other side, and she didn't put anybody's name by any of those pictures. Okay? And when the girls walked in, she says, okay, here's your assignment. Your assignment is pick these people over here in these wedding pictures and see if you can match them to the photos over here on this other side. Because the other side's real easy because this is current picture of all these couples here at Bethel. Okay, so the girl, oh, this will be easy. This won't take any time. So they looked over and looked at all the wedding pictures and, you know, they're doing this number. They're looking back and forth and back and forth. Okay, all right, here's Jim, let's just take Jimmy and Pam. Okay, where's their wedding picture? They sort of look at that and says, I think that's it. Candace, nope, wrong. It's not them. That's somebody else over here. What? Nope. Well, which one is it? No, that's for you to figure out. The one you thought was Jimmy, who do you think that is? Somebody guessed something else. Nope, it's not who that is. By the way, one guy in that picture over here has got an afro about this wide. Y'all remember that in the 70s? You know, where you had the big hair? Okay, so here's this picture over here. And here's the current picture. Finally, it got down and said, okay, this is Jimmy and this is Pam. And he had hair. He had hair. All right, well, who's this person right here? I don't have a clue who that. Well, that's this right here. What happened? What happened all these years? Okay, bottom of this list right here. It's called the aging process. The aging process. Look, all of this is just, you know, roses and perfume. You know, the wedding picture is just, you know, peachy keen. Guess what? You marry that, you end up with this over here. By the way, you will if you've got long suffering and patience. That's what you have over here. Okay? You know, all of a sudden you got wrinkles, and then all of a sudden you got arthritis, and then all of a sudden, you know, you creak out of the bed. It's not the bed creaking, it's you creaking. Okay? And now you're going to the doctor more than you're going to the grocery store. And the pharmacy because you went to the doctor. Oh, no. We'll get married in our 20s, and we're going to feel this way all the way to our 70s. That's a pipe dream, guys. It's not going to happen. And by the way, they simply tell me it only gets worse. That's generally what I say. Well, you ain't even got to where I am yet. Long-suffering and patience. That's how you make a successful life. Okay? So you take a marriage. I read a statement one time, and I tried to mention it in all three of our kids' wedding ceremonies. The statement by the preacher was, the wedding is not the problem. The wedding is the easy part. It's the living together afterwards. That's the problem. Think about that statement by that preacher. By the way, that's not my words. I borrowed that from somebody else. Oh, let's get the wedding album out. Let's look at all these pictures. Honey, isn't that just saying? I said, you know how much money we spent on those pictures right there? But they're memories. Yeah, $900 worth of memories. You know what we could have done with $900 instead of those pictures? And now you got to fight over the fact that you spent money on wedding pictures. He said, don't sweat the small stuff, man. You're going to have to buy refrigerators and appliances and baby diapers for who knows how long. $900, that's a drop in the bucket. Nobody in a marriage fights over money. Nobody. Folks, that's one of the top three areas of fighting in marriages. According to marriage and family counselors, money. Who controls it and how much is spent? Oh, who controls it? Who's going to pay the bills? Who's going to give me the mad money when I see this on the internet in Amazon? Oh, look, it's on sale. It's on sale. We don't need that. It's on sale. By the way, a bargain is a needed item on sale. Not just the fact that it's 50% off. All of a sudden, man, you just spurred the long-suffering discussion all the way home with us tonight. Shall we go any further? How you squeeze the toothpaste tube. Whether the toilet paper goes over the top or under. Little stuff. Little annoying stuff. By the way, all of this come out of marriage and family class I had at Fried Hardeman. Our teacher's married. I wasn't married. I was dating Pam at the time. And he's talking about stuff. I said, nobody's going to fight over that. He said, you're not married yet. And he started giving this and this. By the time I got through with that class, I was terrified to get married. You're telling me this is what I'm going to face? I'd come out of class dating her. We'd sit at the table for lunch, and I'm talking about class. How do you feel about this? And how do you feel about this? She said, well, why are you asking me that question? Because this is what we talked about in class. You didn't. Yeah. And how about this one? How you're going to raise kids if you have kids. I asked you, how many different parenting styles do you think are in this room? Come on, look around. Just open your eyes and watch. I'm going to raise our kids like my mom and daddy raised me. Looks like I turned out good. Looks like they'll turn out good. Well, I've been watching the way things go. Well, how'd your parents raise you? Well, we didn't do this and we did this. You're kidding me. I'm not kidding you. Well, they let you get away with murder. What makes you say that? And then all of a sudden the kids figure it out and they play mama against daddy and daddy against mama. It don't happen. No, it happens just if you got two. Sometimes you don't have to have two, you can just have one and they can figure that out. And how are you going to deal with this little angel now that God gave you into the world who's playing both of you? You know, it's a mind game, right? Power and control. It's called long-suffering and patience. How about a church family? What if you got problems in your own physical home? Do you think that don't spill over into your church family? I've lived long enough to see that. If all of a sudden you got problems in your physical home, next thing you know, they don't want your church family to know about it. So what do sometimes people do? We'll go find another church. Why? Because the other church is totally oblivious to the knowledge of what's going on with our marriage problems or our home problems. And because they don't know, they won't ask us any question. They just think everything's fine. But folks back at our church family, they'll inquire, are you going through a tough time? So we'll just go find another church. By the way, sometimes just quit altogether. I've seen that happen. Just don't want anybody to bother me. Don't want anybody to ask me. Just don't want anybody to say anything. So to avoid it, I just don't go. And by the way, the very people who love you and want to help you in every way possible, not pry into your private affairs or in your business, but the people you need to lean on are your church family. Sometimes people run from their church family thinking that's going to fix it. Okay, how many different personalities are in this room? How many different personalities are in this room? Okay, and I'm not just talking about male and female and young and old and whatever your education level is and your financial, social, economic status is. Just how many personalities are in this room? And by the way, the bigger the church in attendance and numbers, the bigger the problems. Because you're just adding more personalities and all the background that goes with that. When I was at Neil, we had 50 members at Neil. When I moved to Bethel, there were 180. Because I remember pulling up the first bulletin when we got here. Somebody asked me not long after I was here at Bethel, after I'd moved here, and says, well, how's it going up there where you are at Bethel? I says, I got four times as many problems now as I did when I moved. Oh, you... Then why did you move? Because I got four times as many people who are members of the congregation where I am versus where I was. Four times 50 is 200, right? Roughly. If I can do math right. What is it? More people You think that's not true? More people, more problems? You hadn't read Acts 6 and verse 1. And the multitude of the disciples grew, and all of a sudden there arose a murmuring of the Grecians against the Hebrews because they were neglecting their widows. More people? But we all pray for a growing church. Guess what? We better grow in long-suffering and endurance. Because more personalities, more possible conflicts. What about stresses at work or even at school? Okay, if you go to, I don't know, tomorrow being a holiday, whenever you go to work, if you do go to work tomorrow, what are you dealing with there? You're dealing with people you're having a hard time working with. How does long-suffering fit in there? Okay. What about just the deadlines you have to deal with? You know, there's all kind of projects that end up on your desk, my desk, and so forth. And by the way, writing manuscripts. I don't know if Brother Ken Butterworth has written manuscripts for lectureships, but I got two things I got to write as soon as I get back from Florida this week. Already on my desk, I haven't started either one of them. It's like college students procrastinating writing term papers. You're looking at him. I ain't got over that yet. If you just let me go preach and not have to write a manuscript for somebody's book, hey, I'm all over that. Because I'm going to prep for that. You're going to make me write a 7 to 15 page manuscript to put in your book, and then you're going to come down here and ask me to preach? I got to get up a lesson to preach and write a chapter in your book too. By the way, they give you a free copy of the lectureship book too. Okay, got a whole shelf full of them from Florida School of Preaching down there. Wrote a chapter, two chapters in some of them. Okay, and then next thing you know, you've got sermons to preach, and you've got counseling sessions, and you've got family things, and you've got people to visit in the hospital, and sometimes you've got funerals, and X, Y, and Z. And by the way, that's just my world. By the way, from one week, it just starts over. The next week, same kind of situations. Just keep going. You don't know what's going to happen. And by the way, greatest work in the world. Wouldn't think of doing anything else. So how's your day? Does it take long-suffering and patience to survive from day to day, week to week on your job? How about school? Man, school's hard. Can't wait to graduate. Get out here in the real world. Yeah, how many people are smiling right now? The real world. What in the world is that? That's the world that's... Your mama's not going to call your boss up on there and says, you know, my darling just can't do that homework and they deserve the grade anyway, so everybody needs to be getting the same grade so that everybody can have good self-esteem. Let me tell you something. Young folks, your mama can't get you a promotion on this job. They will fire you if you don't do your job. They won't even hire you just because of who your mama is, maybe. And then this aging process. You know, life begins at 40. Yeah, right. Life begins at 40. Okay, may tell your brain that, your body's wondering what on earth you're talking about. And then you go to 50, and now I'm about to approach 60. And I can read my Bible well enough in Psalm 90 to save 70, if by reason of strength 80 years, yet they are labor and sorrow. And I said, you ain't never said anything more true than that right there. Claude Pepper used to tell me after he turned 80, he says, I'm living on borrowed time. Look at this. I'm living on borrowed time. You may not see me long. By the way, Sister Olive Powell used to tell me, get a good look at me. You won't see me next year. I said, you told me that last year at this time. I would not see you. By the way, for those of you who don't know Olive Powell, you should have learned her. You should have met her. Long-suffering patience. If you summed his whole sermon up, it'd be in one word right there on that wall. Perseverance. Perseverance. The Lord persevered with me and sent his son to die on the cross for me. He put up with a lot of things for me. Put up a lot of things with everybody. And the Lord won't quit on you if you won't quit on you. Now, the Lord hadn't quit on you. Now the ball's in our court. So what do we do with people we have difficulty with? What do we do with circumstances we can't control? We can't fix it. You do that word right there. That's a success to a great, successful life. If you're here tonight, you're not a child of God. We're going to sing the song. Brother Kenny's going to lead us. If you have any need tonight, particularly to be baptized into Christ or come back to your first love, we would hope you'd do that tonight. Put your feet on a road to persevere, to be long-suffering, to endure, and see the crown of righteousness at the end. If you're subject, won't you come then? While together we stand and sing.